Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office and to our presentation for today. My name is Steve Yass, and this is Small Business Accounting Shootout Part 1. If you're new to the channel, welcome. And if you've been here before, thank you so much for coming back. In our podcast and presentation, we're starting a new series for today where we're going to be looking at a variety of different accounting solutions specifically to serve the needs of small business. Small business represents a vast majority of businesses here in the United States, from restaurants to transportation companies, manufacturing companies, professional service firms, construction companies, and more. And their needs are, you know, quite frankly, important. And there are a variety of different accounting tools that are out there that can really help make accounting easy, effective, and dare I say, even fun for these types of organizations. Now, the good news is, in today's environment, you have a lot of different options to choose from. The big boy in the room is Intuit's QuickBooks Online, but there are a ton of other accounting products that are worth looking at as well. From Xero to Wave to Cashew and more, there's something for everybody. In our series today, we're going to identify some of the major concerns with respect to choosing an accounting tool, understanding the landscape of where these different tools fit in. Specifically, we're going to try to understand what exactly is the entry-level startup market, what is the mid-market, what is the enterprise market, and where your organization might fit in. There's lots of different tools at every step of the way, and through the use of my good accounting pyramid, we'll get a sense of where these different products fit in with each other. We're going to talk through, for example, the key demographics and the characteristics of these different accounting products, how we make a decision, what particular pitfalls we should be avoiding, and more. In this particular series, we'll also be discussing a variety of these different tools. Today, we're just going to lay the groundwork to give you enough understanding to make a good decision and just to know what questions you need to ask just to get started. All that and more. So before we get started today, I do want to remind you that our podcast, as with all CPE Today podcasts, are eligible for CPE credit. Today's course code is SBS1. Head on over to cpetoday.com, search for course code SBS1. And if you're listening to this after the fact, you can take a quick, short, 5-question quiz and earn a credit for today's class. You'll be well on your way to maintaining your professional licensing. And besides this particular podcast, we have courses on a wide range of topics, including accounting, audit, personal development, Excel training, you name it, we've got it. Everything you need to be effective in your career. We're going to go ahead and get started right here. I will join you towards the end of our presentation for 3 quick review questions, and then we'll wrap up and get you on your way. Thank you so much for being here, and enjoy our presentation for today. Keith writes in, just a general update. Certainly, we'll keep that in mind as well. Okay, Meredith, interested in learning advanced features of QBO Accountant? Sure, I'll mention some of my favorite features of QBO Accountant. The QBOA program, if you're not familiar with it, is the best way to experience the Accountant's edition of QuickBooks. It does give some additional features that we should know. I'll point out a few of those as well. Michelle writes in, alternative for QuickBooks for clients. Absolutely. Daniel, we want to offer CAS to some of our clients. Okay. And we want to find cloud-based with some of our payroll solution that limits our involvement in payroll. Absolutely. Dan, I'll just skip ahead. I don't believe it's covered in this presentation. My personal recommendation for payroll services from a professional accounting practice would definitely be Payroll Relief from Accountants World. And that is a really cool solution with respect to minimizing your specific involvement with payroll operations. So definitely check that out from Accountants World. And the cool thing about Accountants World is they only work with firms. So you're never going to have run into an instance where the software company is competing against you. Lee writes in, what about costs? QBO is continuing to raise its costs. Is there anything more cost effective? There are a couple free options, including Cashew, for example, and I think Wave might be free as well. But when it comes to power and feature of the free solutions, I'm sorry to report that nothing really kind of comes close to the paid options. Although another option you might want to consider would be Xero. Xero is more cost effective than QBO, but in my opinion, for overall feature and function, QBO is still our overall best choice. Okay, Anita writes in, we're not ready to move from our ERP quite yet. Looking for a workflow approval solution to use when we can move to a new accounting package with an integrated workflow. Okay, cool. I'll keep that in mind. Glenn writes in, I'm interested in your perspective on managed IT services and how to get our managed IT staff up to speed and helping us dive into CAS projects and interact with our other apps. Or is there something that we as CPAs can dive into to figure out how to teach our own clients? Okay. managed IT services. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. You know, someone I would reach out to, Glenn, a colleague and a mentor of mine, would be Randy Johnston, one of the other K2 instructors who's run a managed IT company for years, specifically focusing on the needs of accounting practices. He would be, in my opinion, probably the overall best solution and person to speak to. So I just went ahead and shared with that his email with you as well. And I'll keep that in mind as we talk. Okay. Peggy, want to moving away from QBO? Sure. Keep that in mind. Okay. Simon writes in, is hosted QuickBooks such as QBox a better alternative to QuickBooks desktop? We'd like efficiency to use compared to other cloud providers. Okay. Continue to evolve. Very inefficient. Okay. I'll keep that in mind, Simon. Truthfully, I'm not a big fan of QBox. I feel like services like that tend to limit your ability to do multi-user access. But we'll talk more about that when we get to our existing desktop suite section on QuickBooks desktop. Wow, you folks have a tremendous amount of questions today. So thank you for coming. I will do my best and keep me honest. So if there's questions as we're working through this, go ahead and let me know. So without further ado, why don't we go ahead and dive right into our content for today. There we go. We're going to start our discussion with an overview of the small business accounting landscape. And the intention of this is to kind of give you some key demographics and characteristics so that you can maybe identify where your organization and where your business fits in the context of the larger ecosystem throughout the economy. Now, there is no real firm definition for small business or mid-sized business. It varies depending on industry. It varies depending on country. You know, I have my own personal definition of it, you know, versus other folks. You know, I tend to think of, for example, small business really kind of being under 25 employees. I tend to think of the mid-market being more than 25, more than 50. But, you know, if you look at kind of the bigger definitions of it, really anything under than like, I think it's like $10 million is really kind of considered a small business, and under 100 employees is considered a small business. Although I know plenty of businesses with way more than that are actually pretty small. And I know plenty of businesses that are smaller than that are actually really complex. I would say when we're kind of determining small and mid-tier, we shouldn't necessarily consider revenue to be our only driver, but rather employees are a pretty good way of reflecting upon that, as well as complexity of accounting. There are plenty of businesses that are small but have tons of complexity in their systems that make them act and feel like a much larger organization. So, yet businesses possess certain characteristics and demographic factors that affect the business management in their market. So we've got some information here from the SBA kind of defining what their perspective is for small business. And from their perspective, really anything under 500 employees would be considered a small business. Although, you know, from a company, our company, we have about 12 people. I mean, 500 employees seems like a big business. Although, you know, compared to a Microsoft or a General Motors or a Ford or something like that, 500 is infinitely small. Now, small business is very well represented here in America. We have a ton of small business options. There are about 30 million small businesses in America, and 80% of these, 23 million of these businesses, have no employees other than the actual owner, that whoever that person might be. You know, so we got a lot of sole proprietors, independent contractors, and I would say that that number is probably going to grow. You know, I think with the advent of COVID and people working home and realizing it doesn't really take much to run a business these days, that I think we might actually see more small businesses in the coming years. Small businesses represent virtually everything. You know, it's 99.9% of all firms for public accounting, 99.7 firms with paid employees. If we look at this, a third of known exporting value in our U.S. economy here comes from small business. About half of private sector employees represent small business, and about 40% of overall payroll. You know, so we are very, very well represented, and the needs of our organizations are definitely going to be served by a variety of different applications and companies in the marketplace. So only about a third of small businesses are in it for the long haul. So about two thirds of small businesses don't make it past the 10-year mark. Only about a third actually do. For my business, I feel very proud of that. I just entered into our 12th year of being in business. So I feel like I've kind of made it across that great divide. Now, some that do not survive at least 10 years often exit, not under horrible terms, maybe they get acquired, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they failed. And it could also mean that the owner maybe moved on to a different opportunity, you know. But small businesses kind of have a lifespan. And where I think that's important to know is in the context of our client relationships for firms, you know. I read a report once, and I'm sure this number is no longer accurate, but I read a report once from the AICPA that said the average tenure of a client to a public accounting practice was 7 years, you know? So if you have a client that's made it longer than 7 years, well, that's a pretty good thing. And these were business clients, by the way, not tax returns, you know? So I think that's pretty common in terms of, you know, people only make it about 7 to 10 years and then something happens. They change their business, they move on, they go to work somewhere else, they sell it, it folds, whatever. But you should plan that into your firm operations. You know, you should essentially plan for attrition and for your clients to come and go. In our company, we focus on policy, procedure, standardization. You know, obviously we have our big clients, we have our small clients, we have our clients that we need to definitely give the TLC and care and attention to. But, you know, it's more important for the firm to maintain operations rather than one specific client. I try to not create a concentration risk with our revenue so that we're not dependent on a single client in the event that they go out of business, it would negatively affect our operations. And I would encourage you to do the same. About 30% of small businesses in America are minority owned, and I've got some breakdown here. It's for those specific demographics. And about 15% are owned by immigrants, first generation, which I think is just truly incredible. And of the immigrant-owned businesses, we can see that about 30% of those are in the hospitality industry, whether they be accommodations or food services, and about 30% are also in transportation and warehouse. But I truly think it's incredible that that you can come to this country and that you can be able to open a business. That is kind of an exception compared to most countries out there in the world. You know, a lot of places it's not that simple and it's not that easy. And sometimes maybe we lose track of that in our country, but it's incredible that we do have the opportunity to be able to do that. Now, if we look at the ownership of these businesses, well, ownership is kind of an interesting thing. We see a lot of people working in small business, but the ownership is pretty reflective of a certain class of people. Generally, you know, we're looking at people who are older. Generally, if you've owned a business, your odds of continuing to own another business at some point are pretty high. We're not seeing a lot of young business ownership. In fact, if we look at the younger generation here, millennials, I'm 36, so I guess I would be on the tail beginning of millennials and the tail end of Gen Y of that. It's kind of sad. I mean, it really disappoints me when I think and I look across my friends. You know, I'm thinking about my maybe 10 closest friends. Maybe only one other person is a business owner. There's a couple independent contractors, but for the most part, I've got a lot of friends that work in government organizations now, a lot that teach. But sadly, the spark of entrepreneurship hasn't been ignited. And that doesn't mean that maybe that won't occur at some point. But generally, we're seeing younger people not pursuing business ownership. For me, I've always been a business owner. I worked for my dad for 2 years, got my CPA license, and you know what? I got out of town. I split and said, you know what? Let's game on. Let's start our own business. And my business partner is the same way. And sadly, we've kind of been seeing it amongst younger people declining for many years now, but hopefully with COVID, we'll see that trend reversed. 50% of small businesses are home-based. If anything, I do see that number increasing for a lot of different reasons. You know, COVID has shown us that the need of a central office, in my opinion, isn't nearly as important as it used to be. I mean, we have so many compelling technologies, Microsoft Teams, Slack, Office 365, Zoho, Google Workspaces that are cloud-based. I mean, why do I need to be in the same physical geographic space as my colleagues or my clients. And in fact, in our business, we have clients literally spread across the globe. We have a lot of clients in Utah. We have a lot of clients on the East Coast, including Nova Scotia. We have clients in Europe. We just started working with a new organization in South Africa. If I think about the clients I can drive to out of the clients I work with on a regular basis, there's only one, and I'm in their office maybe twice a year. You know, so the fact that you need an office, in my opinion, is really irrelevant anymore. Many of these cloud accounting solutions, QBO, Sage 100, Sage 300, Dynamics 365, and more, I mean, they're all remote. I mean, you're always going to be remote in the context of those tools. So why force people to be in the same office? Now, there are some compelling reasons like security, compliance, you know, creating a organizational culture, but half of businesses don't do this. And I would tell you that that should not be a make or break thing for you. And if anything, COVID has shown us that we can work successfully outside of the office. These solutions for collaboration and communication, let's pick on Teams as an example here, are truly incredible. How many of you are utilizing Microsoft Teams or Slack? If so, go ahead and shoot me a comment. Let me know what your experience has been like. Now, for those of you who are not utilizing a service like this, these tools are the linchpin of digital communication that allow you to be able to communicate, talk, collaborate with people regardless of where they are located. In my company, in one click, I can start a video chat with my partner. He can see me. I can see him. I can do my screen share. He could see, share his screen. We can communicate and send files back and forth. It's like we're sitting in an office next to each other, but he's in Oregon and I'm here in California. We have staff in Colorado, Illinois, Kansas, and other places. Same thing. I mean, we use SharePoint extensively to share files with each other, and this has allowed everybody to be able to stay home, and we've been able to not only prosperously work, but really kind of grow our business as well. Looking at some of the comments here, I could see almost extensively people are using Teams. Meredith, Jennifer, Anita, Keith, Glenn, Daniel, and others are saying they use it, and pretty much everybody's saying how much they enjoy that solution. What I will say, if you are a Microsoft 365 subscriber utilizing either their small business or their enterprise plan, you know, it's probably the best tool out there. The fact that it integrates in so well with the ecosystem of 365 products, in my opinion, just makes it the absolute linchpin of communication. You know, it answers the question of how do we communicate? How do we work? How do we share files? And overall, it's a really compelling tool. If you're interested in using Teams more effectively, check out the CP Today podcast. We have a podcast coming up shortly about the 10 Teams features you can't afford to not know about and not know how to use. So please don't be afraid of utilizing your home for work. And many small practitioners, they use their home office extensively as the way to be able to meet with clients. And if everybody is working from home due to COVID at the moment, why not work from home yourself? You know, you could still get together in person, maybe at a restaurant or something for client building activities. But I'll tell you what, for the transactional level stuff, you know, when I just need to know, hey, what's your current receivables level, or I need to close out your books and do a reconciliation or something like that. With respect to working now, I mean, you're going to be doing it all remotely to begin with. Alrighty. So about 2.5% of businesses overall have no employees, are franchises. So we do see some franchise business here, and about 5.3% of small businesses with employees are franchise. The vast majority are, let's just call them more true blue classes. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at the ecosystem of different products that are out there. Now, I can't claim credit to have created this large of a diagram here. This was created by my friends and colleagues, Brian Tankersley and Randy Johnston. But this is the cloud accounting versus traditional accounting pyramid of solutions. Okay. And what this graphic shows us is that it shows us all the different products and kind of where they fit in with the SBA's definition for businesses and business size. Now, there's a way you need to be able to read this bad boy. Okay. On the left-hand side here, these are going to be your cloud-based solutions. So these are going to be your QuickBooks Online, your Dynamics 365, and more. Okay. And on the right-hand side, this is where you're going to see your on-premise solutions. Now, the big definition between these. Cloud stuff runs on the internet, 100% browser-based. They might have a mobile app that you can utilize, but it is not software that you will download and install inside your organization. It's going to be something that you just operate and work with on your mobile phone or through Edge or Chrome or something like that. Versus your on-premise, this could also look and feel like it's cloud, like in the sense like your end users are utilizing their browser to interact with it, but you yourself or your organization, to be more succinct, are going to be responsible for installing this either on a network server or on a on-premise data center for your company. There are advantages to both. There are disadvantages to both. There are products that really kind of at every step of the actual pyramid. You know, there's stuff from entry level and micro businesses all the way up to enterprise and really kind of everywhere in between. Now, if we look at our, let's go ahead and start from the top and work our way down, you know. So our enterprise level products, these are going to be your big solutions. You know, this is what you're going to see running at Coca-Cola, Microsoft, or, you know, kind of any larger business, especially global businesses that we see operating today. These are going to be about overall in our economy here, about 9,000 companies. These are employers with over 2,500 employees, over $1 billion in revenue. Well, on the cloud side of this, they're utilizing tools such as Workday, Infor, Oracle, and Epicor for cloud. And on the on-prem, we're going to see SAP and Oracle run. You'll see that some of these providers operate on both sides of the pyramid, meaning they've got products that operate in both or their product can be deployed in both. Now, when it comes to truly big, in my opinion, there's really only two. There's SAP and Oracle. These are massive systems. You would never see these implemented in anything other than the absolute biggest of big municipalities, Fortune 500, organizations that have extreme complexity in their systems, typically publicly owned organizations, as well as government agencies are going to be the ones that run this. SAP, Oracle easily can run into the millions of dollars for acquisition of software, easily run into the millions of dollars for actual implementation for it. And if you've ever utilized either one of these systems, you'll know they are very complex and they're not just an accounting solution, but they are a ERP solution. ERP is a term that we use for enterprise to describe large company-based software. ERP stands for Enterprise Resource Planning. And with Enterprise Resource Planning, what we are looking at is a business operating system. It'll often manage everything regarding the accounts payable, accounts receivable, customers, invoicing, payroll, HR, everything in between. I mean, if you think about it, if you're, again, like a Ford Motor Company, I mean, you've got offices and plants and factories all over the world. Solutions like this are required to have that level of complexity to support. So enterprise is kind of off on its own. Now, over here, we've got our mid-market, okay? And that's everything from what we consider small mid-market to large mid-market. Your small SMB is about 3.2 million companies. This is anywhere from 5 to 100 employees, anywhere from $1 to $50 million in revenue. And this goes all the way up to 100, all the way up to employers with 500 to 2,500 employees, $250 million to a billion. Now, on the cloud-based side of this, this is going to see probably a lot of friendly names that we're familiar with. For example, Epicor or SAP Business by Design, Acumatica, Dynamics 365, Enact, also a Sage product. All the Sage products for that matter, Sage 100, 300, 50C, you'll see that those are all kind of in that mid-market for cloud. And on the hosted side of this, okay, lots of similar companies, Epicor, Acumatica, Open Systems, Exact, and others are going to be listed right here as well. Notice, though, and this kind of blows most people's mind, QuickBooks is down here under your entry level and SMB. QuickBooks is not a very large accounting solution. It's definitely the most ubiquitous. It's definitely the most widespread. Definitely has the biggest footprints of customers and clients, but complicated accounting system, it is not. What QuickBooks has is incredible marketing. Intuit is excellent with respect to telling people how good of a solution it is, but I will tell you that it is great at the companies it's designed to work for, but man, can it be enraging for when your company doesn't meet their exact use case. So on our entry level micro business side of this, this is the vast majority of businesses here, about 23 million, 1 to 4 employees, less than $1 million in revenue. On the cloud side, this is where we're going to focus our conversation. It's kind of this entry level all the way up to the small, medium business side of this. We're going to blow past the SAPs and the Oracles and, you know, the big stuff and really kind of focus on, I think, the more entry level. Now in this space, this is where we're going to get QuickBooks, QuickBooks Online, QuickBooks Enterprise. Again, despite its name, QuickBooks Enterprise, not a enterprise level product. In fact, it is not much bigger than what you would see with QuickBooks Desktop. The enterprise is a great marketing term, though. This is where you're going to see your Zohos, your Xeros, Sage, Cashew, Wave, and others. And when we look at, for example, on the on-premise side of this, not a lot with respect to what you can consider. You know, if we look at this on this side, we've got our QuickBooks Desktop installed, Sage 50, Sage 50C, Acclivity, and that's about it. There's just not really a lot when we look at this with respect to the entry-level on-premise deployment. If we look, the general focus of accounting software almost exclusively is moving to the cloud. If you're going to try to find an on-premise solution, it's honestly slim pickings. There's just not a lot to choose from anymore, and I do not see that changing really kind of anytime soon. Now, so what is the state of the market? Well, I will tell you, the products continue to become more robust. They're becoming more complete. They are becoming more inclusive to different types of businesses. Previously, you know, our choices weren't great. You know, they included, you know, all your normal QuickBooks stuff, but there really wasn't, for example, let's say vertical products, stuff that specialized on the needs of manufacturers or the needs of wholesalers or the needs of nonprofits or construction firms. But we are starting to see more complete, more robust products in general. The whole marketplace is getting better. Now, we're also seeing better business software. ERP is becoming a reality for other people. You know, your Fords, your GMs, your Coca-Colas, they've had ERP solutions forever that run their business operations really well. However, these solutions, again, are millions of dollars to be able to implement, and they're very costly. And not only just in terms of money, but time and opportunity cost. Well, we have a lot more options now for small business where we can have a business operating system. And it's actually easier than ever to build our own business operating system. We can, for example, integrate different products, tools, and services very easily together to try to create our own solution that meets the specific needs of our company, where previously we could not have done that. Now, for example, when we think about building a business, I recommend the best of breed approach. You pick the different applications, the best payroll provider that you like, inventory solution, and you integrate them together rather than trying to pick a suite of applications where it's just one tool, but none of them are really that great, you know, but you pick them because they all talk to each other. Integration's a lot simpler than it used to be. Now, vendors are commonly selling higher-end solutions directly to end users. Previously, we used to see, for example, a lot of the higher end or mid-market stuff being sold by what we call VARs or value-added resellers. And VARs are great because they often bring a level of expertise for your specific industry. You know, so there have been, for example, VARs for manufacturers. There have been VARs for nonprofits, you know, that would bring, for example, some knowledge and understanding of your specific marketplace, but they added their own costs on it as well. Well, now, you know, a lot of these manufacturers are selling their own stuff directly. So it's become easier to be able to acquire this on your own without having to go through a whole bunch of hoops. Now, this is being fueled by the fact that the software is actually becoming easier. It's becoming both more complex and easier at the same time. It's becoming more complex in the fact that it does more stuff, but so much of that logic is being done behind the scenes so that you don't even see it. It just happens. It feels like magic in some respects. And so it doesn't take nearly as much to be able to implement as it did even 5 or 10 years ago. You know, 5 or 10 years ago, I mean, it would be a lot, you know, with respect to being able to put this in place. I mean, you had to, for example, map all these business processes and, you know, had to understand the complexity of how they did inventory and nobody did things the same way. Well, now there's so many good training resources and tools, and a lot of businesses are moving from already from a solution to something else, so we don't have to refigure all that stuff out. So it's becoming a lot easier. Our SaaS-based products are becoming more feature complete. I would say now when you're choosing an accounting solution that SaaS is the rule, not the exception. You know, when it comes to this, as an example here, most of these solutions are going to be cloud-focused first. And if they happen to have an on-premise deployment, well, that's the exception these days. And whenever possible, I would tell you to utilize those SaaS-based tools as much as you can. They're generally going to not only be better, but they're going to be feature rich. And that price that you're paying is going to include not only the actual licensing for the application itself, but then also the support, the service, the backup, the security that most frankly, most people and most companies just don't do correctly. There's also a number of third-party solutions that are still needed, you know, so reporting, tax compliance. Let's take a good one, payroll, as well as sales tax. It is so easy to get both of those things wrong. And increasingly, our businesses are operating in multiple states. I file payroll tax returns in 5 states. I file payroll tax returns in California, Oregon, Illinois, Colorado, and Kansas now. Okay. Often there are quarterlies, certainly with all of these, plus the federal returns. I, for my business, am now filing let's say anywhere from 25 to 30 payroll tax returns a year. Your accounting solution is, to be able to do this manually would be impossible. But utilizing services like Payroll Relief or utilizing other managed service providers, we use a company called SDP, Southland Data Processing, to do this. It's becoming a lot easier. You know, not only, for example, managing my payroll tax compliance, but also managing all my HR compliance too. You know, I couldn't do this without great software. Sales tax compliance. Increasingly, we're working with companies and clients and customers globally. Well, due to the Supreme Court action, Wayfair versus the state of South Dakota, guess what? You now have sales tax compliance in wherever you happen to have an economic nexus. You know, the fact that you might not have a physical nexus doesn't matter. In the state of California, as an example, you do any business here, for the most part, more than just about this much, you're going to have to be subject to sales tax here in the state of California. You're going to have to file a sales tax return. How the heck are you supposed to do that? There are 720 jurisdictions in the state of California with different rates. And on top of that, you got different rates depending on what you're selling. And some of these laws are crazy. I could tell you from the continuing education perspective, if we do a conference in Seattle, guess what we base our sales tax on? I'm not kidding you. We base it off the value of the paper that's in the book. And if we don't give you a book, then we don't have to pay sales tax on it. But how the heck are you supposed to know this? You know, but thankfully there's solutions like TaxJar and TaxCaddy, and probably the overall best solution is Alavera's Avitax product that not only can help you ensure that you're charging the right tax, but there's someone you can call that you can ask these questions to and say, hey, you know, what am I supposed to do for Monroe County, Ohio? Or how am I supposed to tax this correctly for, you know, Monterey County, California? You know, these solutions can plug into your accounting package. And I'll show you some examples of these when we look at some of these accounting tools here in a little bit that will calculate this for you automatically, ensuring that you're meeting your compliance requirements. And compliance, that's the third arm of all this now. Compliance requirements are only going up. Reporting requirements are only going up. If you don't have a good accounting solution that can essentially manage this, yes, you know, you might be making money, but I mean, those regulatory agencies are going to come after you at some point and send you a letter, and you're going to have to be able to justify what you're doing. So we want accounting solutions that support the ability to bring in third-party stuff, whether they be for reporting. Maybe we're looking at solutions like Power BI or one of my personal favorite reporting tools, MyDBR, or budgeting purposes, business intelligence purposes, compliance purposes, and more. Now, how do you want to make a decision on this? Well, the business needs are still paramount. What I would tell you is you need to objectively think about your business and what you are going to do and how you're going to go ahead and do it. The specific needs of the company will be what you're going to want to think through with respect to creating your plan for implementing a solution choosing a solution, then ultimately implementing it. Certain things are going to be absolutely must have to be there. Other things, for example, are going to be nice to have, and it would be cool if it were there, but they're not going to make or break. If I can give you one bit of advice as you're starting to think through your requirements, is that do not make everything a absolute must-have feature or function. That often will kill a project. If you were to think of, let's say you had 25 things on your list that you needed, okay, only about maybe 5 of those are critical business requirements that they absolutely have to be there to support the specific operations of the company. You know, an example of this would be like, well, it has to have a general ledger. It has to have accounts payable. It has to have accounts receivable, things of this nature. Realize, though, that some functions might be best served outside of the accounting package. A good example of this is payroll. I do not do payroll in my accounting package. Why? Mostly because I told you I'm going to file payroll tax returns in 5 states. Well, what I do is that I journal that stuff in. And if I need the detail, I go to SDP and I run the necessary reports to do what I want. But certain features and functions, depending on the needs of the organization, may or may not be make or break functions. Plant your flag where it matters. And if there are functionality that you can get from other systems, I'm not saying you can't do whatever you're looking to do, but find what those other functionalities might be and then maybe focus on reporting or integration between them rather than trying to make every single function business critical. I think you'll find yourself that you are going to set yourself up for failure. A solution that does everything is a solution that does nothing well. It's a camel. And what is a camel? A camel is a horse designed by committee. And I would rather take a solution that does a couple of things really good, that works exactly the way I want, but maybe doesn't have an inventory module. Or if it does have an inventory module, we choose to use something different that does fit the specific needs. I'll give you a quick example. In my life, one of my clients I've worked with forever is a fireworks manufacturing and display company. One of my favorite hobbies for our family that we do outside of teaching and developing software is we shoot fireworks shows. And I've shot hundreds of fireworks shows all over the country all throughout the year. You know, not really during COVID times, but normal times we would do that. So they're also one of my clients too. And I can tell you that we don't use inventory functionality from QuickBooks. Why? Because they have 50,000 SKUs. They have 50,000 different product numbers in multiple warehouses across the country, each one with a different effect. A 3-inch red peony shell, a 5-inch red peony shell, a 4-inch with brocade, with gold glitter, so on and so forth. We built our own inventory solution, you know, not only because of the quantity of inventory that we need to track, but then also they've got regulatory requirements reporting to the ATF. You know, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms is also in charge of all of explosives. And so we have to have, to an extreme degree of reliability, good inventory reporting to every single location, every single bunker. If they move things from one bunker to the other, we have to know about that. You know, so having that kind of level of features and functionality is essential for their business operations. So that is a nice to have functionality, but it's not a make or break functionality. So I would also tell you to kind of put some thoughts with respect to your initial budget and timeline. When I was getting started with my career, I had a good colleague who told me, and I've never forgot this, projects are like gas. They will expand to whatever size space they are in. I can tell you that if this is vendor led, the project will be a lot bigger and a lot more expensive than if it is customer led and you come into this with some knowledge about what products you want and what you want to spend on this. Okay, you might still want to do an RFQ, RFP. In my opinion, though, not really as needed. You're not going to really get a good process out of this. I can tell you most RFQ, RFP processes are great for, you know, if you're the Municipal Water District of Southern California or, you know, Ford or something. But, you know, for your small business accounting solution, do your own research and ask questions. Talk to your colleagues as well. Project management is absolutely essential as you're looking at some of these different tools. I can tell you in the scope of my career, I would say that I have seen at least a dozen or so projects fail through the fault of the clients. You know, and some of these I've been a part of in terms of internal work on the client side. Part of them we've implemented and they failed once they were actually in place at the client, but for different reasons, one way or the other. But almost always the failure has been a result of poor project planning, whether it be poor expectation setting, poor training, poor understanding of the requirements. I've seen projects take 2 or 3 years to implement when they should have been done in 6 months due to bad tone at the top. You know, if you're going to change accounting solutions, there is going to be somebody who's going to throw a hissy fit. That's just what you need to expect. They're going to think that whatever you're doing is going to be wrong and they're going to hijack your project. Having good project management skills to provide the necessary documentation steps and confidence to get you through this is going to be really essential for the success of the project, as well as tone at the top. You know, having executive sponsorship of this project is going to be essential to make this work well. Understanding the project is one of the most important parts of it. Before you buy a single product, before you do one bit of implementation, you need to have a good understanding about what needs to be done, what needs to, and how it needs to function in this new system. What I will tell you, this is a wonderful opportunity to be able to reset the clock. It's a wonderful opportunity, for example, to be able to change business processes that otherwise would have not get updated. You know, think about the way we do business in 2021 and then think about your business processes. You know, some of them might be 5, 10, 15 years old. Let me ask you this. I mean, do you think something that was designed 5, 10, 15 years ago is still as useful today? It might be, but probably not. I mean, we've got client portals, we've got better security, we've got mobile access, we've got products like Microsoft Teams and Slack, we've got cloud hosting providers and more. I mean, I got a client, I'm not even kidding you, I can't make this up. Their process for employee expense reimbursements, or, you know, essentially expense tracking, the controller, she takes the credit card statement and literally cuts it up and then photocopies it and gives it to each person and asks them to write what they did on that credit card statement. I mean, it's just, it blows my mind. I mean, like there's Expensify, there's Concur, there's Tally, there's others that, you know, make the whole employee expense process work great. But you know what? That's what they've done for the last 20 years and they're not willing to change. As such, they're missing out on a lot of opportunities. What should we avoid when choosing these different accounting solutions? Well, we should generally avoid going straight to a vendor if it is going to be, for example, a vendor that's going to try to sell us something immediately. Going straight to the vendor often can lead to choosing a solution prematurely without really kind of understanding the requirements of the project of what we're trying to do. So I would tell you, do some reconnaissance, stand back, watch, don't commit, take as many demos as you possibly can, understand the project as well as you possibly can. Many of the solutions that we're going to talk about today, you know, like QuickBooks Online or Xero or Dynamics 365, they've got trials. Sign up, you know, there's no better way than determining if a solution is going to work for you than to try it out for yourself. Working with the supplier just because they are local is not necessarily a good thing. You know, just because somebody is down the street does not make them competent with respect to what your specific project is. I would tell you, you should work with a supplier that knows your industry. That would be the thing that I would recommend more than anything else. If they have experience and competency in your industry, that is worth more than anything. And the fact that they're not in your time zone doesn't really matter. There's a client I've worked with for years as a partner with. They're the absolute best when it comes to nonprofit accounting. I've worked with a lot of different companies. They do a ton of different work, but they know nonprofit better than anybody, you know, and the fact that they're in Denver makes no difference to me. You know, we can still talk and communicate and collaborate just like we're in the same office using Zoom, Teams and stuff like that. Avoid choosing brand names because they're safe. You know, there's this old adage, nobody got fired for buying IBM. Well, you know, I'm going to tell you that just because they're a big brand doesn't necessarily mean that they are good. There's another solution I've worked with also in the nonprofit space. It's been around forever. A lot of nonprofits, big nonprofits use it, but it hasn't really updated in 25 years. You know, newer technology often is more compelling. It's got better features, functions, and maybe even at a better price point. So I would tell you, don't necessarily just buy something just because it's big. Doing what everybody else is doing. Okay. Well, the best way to make a bad decision is just to, you know, follow the herd without really kind of doing your own due diligence and thinking. Earlier in my career, I implemented a solution. You know, it was the big solution everybody used, and I thought it'd be great because it was already being used by our largest competitor, and it was a miserable failure. It was way bigger than what the company needed. It was way more complex than what the company wanted. And more importantly, the company did not have a very savvy workforce. So this solution wasn't for them because it really required a much higher degree of competency with respect to the technology. So be careful about what other people are doing. I will tell you that in 2021, it has never been a better time to build your own intellectual property, to build your own technology. I mean, you can build stuff to run your business now for a fraction of what it cost 5 to 10 years ago. And I'm not just saying that because that's what we do for a living. I mean, and what our company does. I mean, it's actually pretty easy to build software to meet the specific needs of the company, allowing the operating system of this company to work the way the company wants to operate. When you choose a big box solution, you have to work the way that big box solution works. You cannot bend Dynamics 365 to the will of your organization. You can't force QuickBooks to change accounting methods. It doesn't work that way. So if you have certain complexity, having your own solution gives you that kind of freedom to be able to choose your own path. Not running your own numbers and budget. Again, gas will expand to the size of room it's in. Find out what you want to spend. Find your own budget. Now, right size it. I've worked with plenty of clients that have Ferrari tastes, but they're on a Pinto budget. You know, they want to drink Dom Perignon, but they can only afford Budweiser. But you'll at least know and be able to get the best value for your investment, your best ROI. Avoid cloud solutions where exit costs are not understood and that you can't get your data out. I've unfortunately seen providers that will do vendor lock-in, which to me is really not great, but I do understand it in some respects, and I'll explain in a second. You want to be able to ask, like, what's going to happen if this doesn't work out? Can I get my data back? Do you give us a database export, or do I have to run everything through reports? I don't know. Now, some applications are designed with what we call multi-tenant. QuickBooks Online is a good example of this. It's a multi-tenant application, meaning there are multiple companies running on a single instance. Their data is segmented, so it's not the same data. Well, it is the same database, but it's not like you can see the other company's data. But there's no way for QuickBooks to be able to segment just your one company from all the other companies operating there. So if you need to leave, you're going to be limited to whatever export options are available. You need to understand that before choosing a solution, because there's a chance your project will fail. Welcome back, colleagues. Let's go ahead and have three quick review questions and then wrap up for the day. Our first question, what percentage of small businesses have employees other than the owner themselves? So thinking about it, out of small businesses, an overwhelming percentage of them are sole proprietors, meaning, you know, it's just on their own most of the time, maybe, you know, a small staff with them. But most of the time, really, small businesses are just the owner themselves. They're self-employed. Only a small percentage of business actually grow beyond that initial owner themselves being employed. So what is it? Well, is it 25%? Nope, I don't think it's that. Is it 80%? No, that's way, way, way too high. Likewise, 75%. It's about a fifth. About 20% of small businesses will have an employee other than the owner. So it's not a big characteristic of most businesses. Most small businesses are just the owner themselves. All right, question number two. Which of the following statements is true about small business accounting solutions in general? So just broadly speaking, is it increasingly small business accounting solutions are cloud-based? Absolutely. As I've said many times, cloud is the rule, not the exception. You should actively be looking for solutions that are cloud-based rather than traditional or in on-prem. The cloud is easier, it's faster, it's worldwide deployable, it's scalable, and in a lot of respects, it's even more cost-effective. Okay, small business solutions often partner with other solutions. Yeah, that could be true too. Often with respect to smaller solutions, they're not going to have everything under the sun to suit the needs of your organization. So often they have to integrate or share with other organizations' applications in order to be able to provide a full comprehensive list of functionality to the organization. So it's not uncommon, for example, to find partners with other solutions. Is it small businesses Small business solutions are sold increasingly on monthly or subscription basis. Absolutely. As I've said again, you know, you should plan to expect to pay for these services on a month-to-month basis. That's pretty normal these days. And I've said it before, I don't think I've worked on a single application in over a decade that is a buy it, you own it. They're all, you know, you pay for it on a regular basis. So the correct answer here is all the above statements are true. All right, our third question. Which of the following is an enterprise business solution? Is it Oracle? Yeah, absolutely. That is the one listed here. However, just to give a shout out, Zoho, Xero, Sage 50 all can work with a lot of different size organizations, but they definitely are not intended to be working with like Fortune 500 or organizations the size of Walmart or Amazon. You know, really, you know, it's appropriate size for appropriate size. You know, Fortune 500 needs to do work with larger organizations like an Oracle or an SAP. And likewise, your organization wouldn't get really much value from utilizing those big solutions either. So always pick the right solution, just in the same way that you pick the right tool for the job. You know, don't use a jackhammer when a, you know, rubber mallet is what you're looking for. Find the right tool to resolve what you're looking for at the right size. It'll be at the right price. It'll be at the right functionality. And it'll be something you can actually be successful with. All right, so that does bring us to the end of our first episode in this particular series. We've got at least three more in the plans for you. Today, we kind of discussed and went through some of the macro characteristics with respect to choosing solutions and understanding essentially that small business market. And we talked about some of the major differentiating and similarities between the small and mid-sized organizations that are out there in terms of their complexity, type of solution, and more. We talked about the state of the accounting solutions market. We talked about some of the solutions that are cloud-based as well as some that are on-premise. We also talked about what tools are designed for each market and how each market has their own specific needs and wants that specific tools are designed to fit and resolve. We also created a list of features and functions that might be ideal for our specific accounting application, what we should be looking for. Now, in the next episodes of this course series, we're going to be looking at identifying specific applications, you know, really kind of going through to decide what's a good fit, discussing many of the major applications, where they are useful, what specific type of organization they're designed for, some of the tips and tricks and hazards that you should be aware of when choosing these different solutions. We'll also talk about some of the third-party tools, add-ins, extending application, wrapper tools, and more to complete the solution and make it complete for what your organization needs. Now, before you go, I do want to remind you again, if you watched or listened up to this point, guess what? You can get a credit for your participation today. If you're watching after the fact through YouTube or Facebook or wherever you happen to be receiving media, guess what? You can go and get a credit for today's class. It's super simple. Head on over to cpetoday.com. Today's course code is SBS1. You put that code in, you'll find that course, you'll take a short 5-question quiz, and you're well on your way to maintaining your license. In addition to our podcast today, we have courses on a wide range of topics, everything we think you need to be effective and powerful in your career. So if you're a working professional and you're learning on the go, maybe a podcast is the way for you. Or maybe check out one of our webinars and attend and ask questions live and in person. If you enjoyed our content today, please consider reaching out and connecting with us on social media. You can find us virtually everywhere at CPE Today, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and more. We'd love nothing more for you to drop a comment and let us know what you think. You can also subscribe to us, which really helps build the channel and helps help other people find out about our content. You can subscribe wherever you happen to get your content, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and others. We'd love for you to leave us a review. Let us know what you think of today's content and course. As always, it's my pleasure to be with you. It is always a pleasure to be able to teach and instruct fellow professionals and colleagues. And look forward to seeing you back in the office the next time around. Thank you, best wishes, and good luck.